Coming up on today's show.
If you can build a social media following and you have a good personality and you're authentic and people enjoy you and they want to follow you, and if you can work hard enough to do that yourself, you do not have to have a record label anymore.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the Florida Panhandle, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who has released 4 singles in 2024, the most recent of which came out on June 28th. Just over 4 years ago, he had a song that went viral and landed him national attention, and present day, he has 794,000 followers on TikTok, where he has had multiple videos get 1 or more million views, plus a combined total of 2.7 million video views on his official YouTube channel, approximately 950,000 streams on his top 5 songs on Spotify alone, and more than 45,000 monthly listeners on that platform. In 3 weeks, he will be performing at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival. You've been hearing a song of his called Take Me Back to the 90s. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Austin Foreman.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for having me, man.
You bet. Yeah, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today. Let's have some fun.
Yes, sir.
For starters, since I was talking over it, and also the whole track was not played, tell the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing during the intro called Take Me Back to the 90s.
Yeah, man, that is my favorite release so far. It's done the best out of any of my songs. It is one of the first songs that I wrote after I quit drinking. So a little over a year ago, I quit drinking. And I wrote a bunch of songs during that time period to keep my mind busy. And when I wrote that song, I just thought of all my favorite 90s country songs and how country music's changed, and went down that road. And my buddy Bobby and I had written a part of the chorus already probably a year prior to that. So I took that bit of the hook and just structured out the rest of the song. And man, it debuted at number 7 on the iTunes charts. And it was the first song I had to be played on FM radio stations across the country. A lot of them still play it. And I don't have a record deal or anything like that, you know, so that's pretty rare occurrence. So I'm blessed to have my brain somehow come up with that one.
So you started to mention that you and Bobby had done some of it. Is it a song that otherwise came together pretty quickly, or is it, no, I just had the idea for it and it took us quite a while before we really got it into the form that you just played?
Right. So at first, say a year or two ago, the idea for Take Me Back to the 90s, that general idea, it was a totally different song, actually.
Wow.
When him and I first had it and we're trying to do it, and I was going through my old notes, you know, trying to write more music and saw that, and completely, because it used to be about the life back in the 90s, like, you know, with the street lights turning off and going home, you know, and how much safer maybe the world seemed. And I just wanted to make it about the country music. What I did is I had this playlist that I've built of all my favorite 90s country songs on Spotify. And I sat down with a notepad and a paper and I went through my playlist and I figured out a way to work in as many songs and give as many tributes as I could to that one song.
Did it even change musically from what you had originally come up with, or is it kind of still the same melody, just different lyrics that you changed?
The melody is changed completely, minus the hook line that Take Me Back to the 90s.
Wow.
That was the same.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so many questions for you. My gosh, let me see what order I want to do these in. Let's start off first by going back to the beginning, meaning tell us about when and how you got your start in music.
I taught myself how to play the guitar when I was about 12 years old, when I started. And just my whole life, I mean, I remember being 6 years old, watching Garth Brooks VHS tapes, dancing in the living room, just wishing I was him, you know? And so when I got old enough to be able to play in bars and stuff, of course, I was in there playing in the bars and, you know, was making $50 a night or maybe getting free beer or whatever it was. And I didn't really understand the social media aspect of it, you know, and how much the world had changed until 2020.
So when you said at 6 years old you were watching Garth Brooks and at 12 you picked up a guitar, this sounds like, and I'm putting this in form of a question, this sounds like this was all kind of you being a self-starter. In other words, you're not one of these people that says, oh, well, I come from a musical family and of course it was inevitable that I was going to end up playing. I'm not hearing you saying any of that.
Yeah, no, sir, not at all. Now, my father, my biological father, does play guitar and sing, but he's been in prison pretty much since I was 4 years old. So I didn't really have a relationship with him. And my mom, she likes to sing. It's just she sings in church and such. But no, nobody ever pursued music in my family. It's just something I wanted to do, and I've never strayed from it.
So did you ever at any point end up taking guitar lessons? Is everything self-taught? Have you taken any voice lessons, any songwriting courses, or is all of this just you initiated it, learned it all on your own?
Everything is self-taught, yes, sir. So when I was learning to play guitar, I would just hang out with people that, you know, played. Guys usually around my age, maybe a couple years older, that had already played or started playing, and I would just kind of learn as I go along with them, or you know, look at those posters with the chord charts on them and just tell me where to put my fingers. And then I would just listen to songs and try to play them by ear, you know, going by the chords. And the same thing with the piano. I sat down in my grandfather's church and he was a preacher. So I'd go to work with him and sit there at the piano and look at that poster and learn the chords there.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Would you say, Austin, that this is kind of a results not typical, or is it, you know what, if anyone's listening out there and they're just getting started into music, don't be bashful about doing it all on your own? Or would you say, I'm a bad example, you really should go out and get yourself guitar lessons, you really should go out and get yourself a voice coach?
So that's a hard question to answer, I guess, because if for me, I feel like it may have impaired me to go get vocal lessons and stuff, or even guitar lessons, because of the way that I learn and the way that it's structured when you teach. So I don't know. Vocal lessons to me can only do so much good for somebody. Now, I would take vocal lessons. I don't believe that I'm too good for them. I always believe you can improve, but that's because I already sing. If somebody has never been a singer, doesn't want to be a singer, doesn't really have that tone in their voice, I think a vocal lesson might be a waste of time, because it'll teach you how to, you know, hit pitch, but you might not sound right still.
I like that. I like that. It does make sense, though. Audience, I hope you're starting to get used to this new segment. I believe this is the fourth week of it. These are my dates for the 2024 NHTE Tour, 10 years of Talkin' Tunes. As I go around the country looking to connect with you, the audience, in celebration of the show having hit its 10-year anniversary back in February, if you are or will be in one of these cities, email me via podcast@nhte.net or DM me on Instagram and let's make plans to meet up. September 23rd to the 28th, I will be in Los Angeles. The next week, October 1st through the 6th, I will be in the Florida Panhandle at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, including, but not limited to, putting on a Promoting Your Music Career workshop on Saturday, October 5. That, by the way, is free and open to the public. October 11th, I will be at the West Dawson Music Venue in Dawson Springs, Kentucky, for a show featuring three Nashville songwriters. At the beginning of December, I will be in Las Vegas, including but not limited to speaking at the Las Vegas Writers Retreat, which, by the way, is for writers of books, not music. There is also a good chance of two other tour dates, two other cities being added. Sign up for the newsletter, keep listening to the show, follow on Instagram to know if and when more are added. I would love to meet you somewhere out on the road. Austin, you told us about how you got your start in music, but let's make this two separate questions. Before you tell us about the song that went viral and landed you national attention, set us up first for it by telling us about January 1st, 2020, just to pick a round date, meaning what specifically were you doing in your music career then? Were you writing? Were you recording? Were you performing? Was music a full-time career for you? Take us back to the very start of 2020 and just tell us what Austin Foreman music looked like at that particular time.
Man, very different. I had not too long before that, let's say maybe a year before that, I had decided finally that I was just going to go for it all and chase music full time. And, you know, I had zero experience in social media. I didn't do it at all. So I was playing bars 5 to 6 nights a week, you know, not making very much money at all. Matter of fact, I was living in a shed, a shed in a backyard, and I didn't have a vehicle anymore because mine had broken down. I couldn't afford to fix it. I wasn't doing that great. It was like the bottom of the bottom of, you know, that chasing that music dream thing. And yeah, it was pretty rough, man, but you know, you just it was very different. I'll never go back there. That's my biggest fear.
that was in the Florida Panhandle, what you just described.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that was in a Pace.
In January 1st, 2020, were you single? Did you what did your personal life look like?
No, I was seeing a girl then.
Okay. And audience, I want you to hear that particular scene setting that Austin and I just did, because now, Austin, I want you to go ahead and you've set us up. So now walk us through the song going viral and landing you national attention.
Yes, sir. So I had a song called Palettes Full of Ballots that I wrote with, once again, my friend Bobby. The more we talk about songs, the more you'll hear his name. he's one of the only people I trust to really write songs with. And it was about the 2020 election and, you know, the aftermath. And I think the title kind of is self-explanatory there. At any rate, we wrote it the day after the election. And I went on my girlfriend at the time, her back porch, and I had this little $60 cell phone from Walmart and recorded it. And then I used the editing app to put words on it so I could try to make it look better and, you know, people might watch it. And matter of fact, I'm sorry, that was the second song I had go viral. But at any rate, that thing took off like wildfire. And that's when I ended up in multiple news stories done about me, including the New York Times.
Wow.
Yeah, they were the first people to ever fact check a song.
Interesting.
So, yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to continue this, and I want to stick with 2020 because I read somewhere that, and I'm not going to steal your thunder, I'm going to let you tell the audience what the first song was, because I believe, I want to say that was April of 2020, and of course the election was later in the year. But help me out here, because I read somewhere that once that first song went viral, your next hit was, as you just mentioned, Palettes Full of Ballots later that same year. Yet when I look on iTunes and Spotify, I don't see Palettes Full of Ballots. Is that you being censored by those platforms, or what's the case with that song?
So after that song got pretty big and it was on Newsmax and, you know, got a lot of conservative attention, everywhere started censoring me. And YouTube actually not only censored me, but anybody that had the term or phrase Palettes Full of Ballots in any of their content, it was immediately removed.
Wow.
And they had actually put out a memo about it. So, yeah, I was very censored. And then, you know, it got to a point where we said, okay, I'm going to take it off of streaming platforms.
Okay.
You know, and it was so bad at the time. Now it's a little different, you know. I don't think anything's going to compare to what it was in 2020, and I hope it never does. But
okay, I have all kinds of follow-up questions that are coming to my mind. So first of all, tell the audience what that first song was that went viral, the one that was earlier in 2020, because I would think that that one in itself is a little bit on the controversial side, that I'm surprised, unless you're going to tell me that you did catch some flack for that one.
Is That Bitch Carol Baskin was the name of the song. And that was, of course, about Tiger King. That is the first comedic type song that I ever wrote or did. Mm. And the very first thing I had that went viral. Yeah, so I had maybe 1,600 followers on a Facebook page at the time. I didn't have an active YouTube channel. And when I uploaded it to Facebook, it hit 14 million views eventually on Facebook.
Wow.
And then YouTube, I started my YouTube channel with that video, and it has over 1 million views.
Now, just so we're clear, when you say that you uploaded that bitch Carol Baskins to Facebook, a video or just the MP3 track, or in what format was it that it took off on Facebook?
It was the same format as Palette. So same thing. I sat on that porch and just made a little cell phone video and used this old editing app to kind of box it out and put the words so people could read along with it. I was trying to figure out new methods because I didn't have no money, right, to promote my music or anything. So I was trying to figure out new ways to use social media and get people's attention.
But I can't imagine that even though you were that thoughtful about it, how can I use social media? How can I get more attention? I got to build up my following. I can't imagine that you thought, I bet you I'm onto something here. That bitch Carol Baskins, this is going to be a song people are... You couldn't have foreseen that, could you?
No. Did I think I would still be talking about it in 2024? No, sir. I mean, like I said, when you have, you know, 1,600, 2,000 followers on a platform and you're used to not really getting views and... You don't really expect it when it happens at all because you don't know how it works. You're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks, you know?
So I'm interested to hear more now about, you say the New York Times fact-checked Pallets Full of Ballots. Did they contact you? And if so, were you sure it was them or did you think, yeah, right, this person says it from the New York Times?
Well, they emailed me first from a New York Times email account.
Okay.
So they did email me, and the reporter did call me. I was at Chili's, actually, with Bobby. He did call me, and I did a short little, you know, asked me a couple questions. And I was very well aware of the fact that this was not going to be some super positive piece on me. But, you know, I will say for them, they didn't make personal attacks on me. The headline was, no, the Pallets Full of Ballots song was not true. And then there, the picture was just like a screenshot from my video and an X through it.
Wow.
So, you know, they could have been worse on me.
Now, let's go to the songwriting angle here. Was it Pallets Full of Ballots or was it That Bitch Carol Baskins? Which of those two songs did you say was your first crack at kind of comedic parody writing?
It would be Carol Baskins.
Okay, and so when you wrote that, did it feel different in terms of the writing of the song compared to anything else that you were used to writing?
So much easier.
Really? Explain that.
Oh, yes, sir. I think for me, it was just because I didn't really have to dig deep, you know, about anything I felt. There was nothing personal really about it. And I don't know. I feel like it's just a lot easier to write unserious stuff or humorous stuff for me. Because I think that's just my attitude anyways. Humor kind of comes naturally. So I don't know. You can get away with saying or using words that are more simple, right, when you're being humorous. You can get away with saying stuff that you would never get away with saying in a serious setting or serious song. See, I can use those Johnny Cash-style rhythms, right, and those beats, and the very simple, and it just works out. It's always been a lot easier for me to do that.
Wow. Wow. Great, great insight. This is fascinating. I love this. I love this. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the Florida Panhandle by singer, songwriter, guitar player Austin Foreman. As you heard back in the intro, he is very much on social media. On the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, I'm going to put a link to a Linktree page that has lots and lots of entries so you can tap or click to go to numerous platforms to engage with him. His music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music, plus social media channels, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Wow, you heard me say it back in the intro, 794,000 followers on TikTok. By the way, his music is also available on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that you can find this show on. And also do look for him on Twitter as well. If you are or will be in the Florida Panhandle at the start of next month, the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival is happening from October 1st to the 6th, and Austin will be performing at that event, a great opportunity to go see him perform live. Earlier today, just as a little experiment, I went on the OWL app, and I did a search on the word songwriter, and 24 results popped up. Had I done, say, musician or something like that, I'm sure there would have been lots more. The point is, OWL is where you can make great connections right away. You can wait around to see if someone accepts your connection request on LinkedIn, or you can wait around to see if someone sees, never mind responds to, your private message, whether that's an Instagram DM or a LinkedIn private message, or you can talk to someone you want to connect with. OWL, that's like the bird, except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section, and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The OWL app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It is a required field. Austin, I just mentioned in there about your massive, massive following on TikTok. There are so many artists nowadays who say, TikTok is such a great music discovery platform. I just need to find a way to blow up on there. But that's easier said than done. I've heard it said that if you're really going to go all in and be successful with TikTok, you have to post 3 times a day, every day. What is your take on all this that I'm saying? What is your advice?
Well, first of all, I do want to say currently, at the rate I'm growing right now, it's extremely fast, so I understand, but I'm actually in between 880 and 890,000 now.
Oh, my gosh.
On followers.
Oh, my gosh.
So we've grown 100,000 followers maybe a week right now. But at any rate, yeah, the 3 posts a day. So here's the thing. I've heard a bunch of that type of stuff, too. I do believe that you need to be consistent with posting, and the reason is because it's easy to get discouraged, because when you first start, you're not going to get any views. That's just how it's going to work. I don't think I've ever seen anybody post their first video on TikTok and go super viral and gain a lot of followers. It doesn't happen like that. But that's all right, because it gives you a chance to practice and perfect your art and your craft. And the thing about TikTok that makes TikTok different is their algorithm is constantly changing. So algorithm, by that I mean the formula that the app uses to decide which videos it's going to show to its consumers. So you never really know. So I'm just kind of out here posting. I still do it. I'll just post. Sometimes I'll post 3 times a day. Sometimes I'll post 12, 13 times a day.
Wow.
Or sometimes one time, you know. I rarely miss a day because it's not difficult, you know, to get on there and make a little video. But, you know, blowing up on TikTok is... So you can blow up on TikTok and have a bunch of views, but not get many followers, right? So it might be something people wanted to watch and send to their friends, but they weren't interested in you enough to follow you because maybe the video was about someone else or, you know, content you took from something else. And I've had that happen. I've made that mistake in the past. Just, you said advice. I would just say be yourself. Find a purpose. Right. Figure out what you want to do on there and who you are and what you want to stand for. And just get out of there and do it, you know.
What I'm going to ask you now sounds like common sense, but is it a case of if an artist says, I'm just not that person, I just don't see myself as someone who is going to make even one video every single day, never mind twice a day or three. Is it a case of, you know, that's fine, but do the math. You're not going to get anywhere on TikTok then.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, not only will you not get anywhere on TikTok, you're not going to make it in general at all in music. Because the thing about it is even record labels, you know, they want you to have a certain amount of followers before they'll sign you.
Mm.
It proves you're marketable, right? It proves you can market yourself. And you're doing a lot of the hard work for them by going ahead and building a fan base. I like to say social media is like, you know, if a musician was, you know, up on Wall Street, like social media is like your stock. So a label will look at you, and if your stock's really high and you got a lot of followers and interaction, then you're worth more to them. But, you know, that's why they'll pick the guy that can has a mediocre voice over the guy that has a stellar voice, because the guy with the mediocre voice has 2 million people watching him already.
Wow.
Right? And
wow.
That's just business.
Yeah, I like that comparison. And forgive my ignorance. I do pride myself on the research that I do leading up to each interview. But you said earlier that when this first started for you in January of 2020 and how tough things were, and then all of a sudden that bitch Carol Baskins ends up going viral, and you said this was just you doing it on your back porch. You weren't signed to a label or anything like that, and yet you charted. So are you still doing this all independently, or has all of this social media success landed you a deal?
I'm still independent, and this is by choice. After Take Me Back to the 90s did as well as it did, Warner Music up in Nashville reached out, and I actually went up there and met with them. And we talked, and you know, they were interested in continuing the relationship, and we were heading that way, and we were going to work together or possibly, and I decided against it because, you know, I have certain things that, okay, to put it mildly, I have a big mouth, right? I like to talk about stuff that are important to me, like issues, whether that be political or just societal issues. I want to be able to make a certain difference in the world and not just be a singer. And so I didn't want to be put in any type of position where anybody else owned my music or my way to make a living and provide for my family so that they could hold that over my head and shut my voice down. So I wrote a song and posted it on TikTok, directed to them, and it wasn't nasty really or anything like that because they were nice people, and I have nothing against the people that, you know, the president of Warner, she was very sweet, all the A&R people. It's just the machine itself and the system that you don't have to be a part of. If you can build a social media following and you have a good personality and you're authentic and people enjoy you and they want to follow you, and if you can work hard enough to do that yourself, you do not have to have a record label anymore.
Well said, well said. And so as a follow-up then, getting back to the social media conversation that we were having before I took us off track a little bit there. So as Austin said, the updated number, 882,000 TikTok followers. And then I had mentioned a combined total of 2.7 million video views on your official YouTube channel. You're in a great position, Austin, to offer advice to people when it comes to dealing with users who leave negative comments on your videos, whether it's TikTok or YouTube. They say that for purposes of the algorithm, you should respond, but other people will tell you, no, just ignore those, because as soon as you respond, that commenter tries to start fighting with you in the comments. Leave the comment for the algorithm, but don't reply to it. So what is your advice on how performers should deal with negative comments that people leave on their videos?
Well, I think that depends on how tough your skin is. Because obviously, number one, everybody's going to get negative comments. So what I do, you know, I'm not in one box. Like I said, you know, I'm not just an artist. So I'll take these comments and I'll use them to benefit me. So I'll use them as content. So I'll take a comment, and on TikTok, you can actually take the comment and make a reply with a video that includes the comment, right? So I will take that comment, and let's say this person that made that comment, I go to their page and they have a video of them, I don't know, talking about something, being silly. I'll take their video, I'll what we call roast them, right? So I'll chop their video up and make fun of them for, you know, 5 minutes with their comment. and, you know, it's funny for the viewer. People eventually get terrified to comment on your stuff and say bad things because your followers go over there and troll them in their comments, right? And they don't like that. And I have fun with it because, I don't know, it's so much better than getting upset about it. You know, that's one way. But if you cannot do that, and if you can't handle, you know, the negativity that some people can bring, then yeah, maybe you should just ignore them. Yeah. Right. So,
but that's a fascinating perspective. And I love the way that you, life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. All of a sudden, it's like, the more you comment on my videos, the more material you're giving me to create even more content. That's brilliant.
Right. Like, hey, you just made me $50. Thanks.
So on a related note, you have not shied away from controversial subject matter, whether videos or your original music or both. I recently heard someone in the music business talk about making sure that an artist doesn't get painted with one brush, like, oh, that's the person who does all the patriotic songs, or, oh, that's the one who does all the parodies, or, oh, that's the one who does all the sad Debbie Downer songs. So have you made it a point, Austin, to say, yes, I will take on the controversial stuff, but I'm also going to make sure that that's not what I become solely known for?
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, it took me a while to figure this part out because of, you know, the way that you just said that is the way everybody says that, right? Well, which lane are you going to fit in, basically, and not sticking in one lane? And I guess the easiest way for me to decide how this was going to go for me is for me to just say, you know what? I'm going to be myself. I'm going to do what feels right at the time. And just go with it and just be who I am and not overthink everything. Be wise and smart about my decisions, but don't make decisions based off of fear or worry or anything like that. Just kind of do what I believe is right. And you know what? There's going to be a lot of bad ideas, but you're going to have some good ideas too in there.
Yeah, and I think that what you're also describing is one of the downfalls of if you do sign with a label, they're going to tell you, we don't want you to do this. We want you to sound like that. We want you to go down this road. And all of a sudden, like you say, you're going to make some bad decisions, but you only have yourself to answer to. You make a bad decision with a label, you risk getting dropped.
Absolutely, yeah. Labels will, and I'm not shaming them for this, right? They've invested
right.
a lot of money in this person. So,
sure.
But they will say, okay, well, no, we want you to sing this song that this guy that works for us, he wrote this song. And it could be something that you just really don't even want to sing, but you end up having to do it anyways. And, that's what you said, labels dropping. The only way somebody can be canceled, as they say, is if somebody can cancel them, somebody being that record label that owns all their work.
Mm.
Well, you can't cancel somebody that works for themselves if they don't care. I mean, if they don't care and they don't stop talking, people are still going to watch them.
But on the topic of songs that maybe you otherwise wouldn't want to sing, because you have achieved the level of success that you have, do you have people that are coming to you now pitching you songs that they've written that they want you to cut?
It happens a lot in, let's say, messages on social media,
yeah,
or something like that. I don't physically hang around a lot of people. Like, I like to keep to myself for the most part. So it doesn't happen a lot. And the only songwriters I'm around are people like Bobby or Troy Martin, who's a great guy, and my friend Nick B. So I limit my friends, my circle, I guess you should say. So,
and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're saying that you're not an artist who is open to receiving pitches from other songwriters, from anybody in the music business that's out there trying to get someone's song cut by a different artist.
Well, it's not that I'm not open to it. I certainly am, but I guess I could say I don't really pay as much attention to them because, I get so many messages and emails and this, that, and the third. It's the bottom of my priority list.
I see.
Put it that way.
I see. Good. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you clarified that. I have mentioned twice that you are calling in from the Florida Panhandle, Fort Walton Beach in particular. With all the success that you have had in country music, I made the mistake of assuming that you lived in and would be calling me from Nashville. Have you considered moving there at all? Is there a chance that we might see you pack up the family and relocate to Music City? Do you make trips there with any degree of regularity?
I do make trips there. I'll actually be back there next month to record more music. I record up there mainly because, it's very hard to find the equivalent of a professional Nashville country musician. So they can play on your tracks. Even the engineers up there, the best of the best are up in Nashville. And so you want to get the best, you got to go up there. But no, I would never move there. Well, I don't want to say never, but at least not until my oldest daughter is 18. So 9 more years.
Is that because you are passionate about the Panhandle? You're born and raised there, I take it?
Well, I was born and raised here for the most part, but no, sir, it's because my oldest daughter is with my ex-wife, and I have visitation with her. So if I moved, it would just mean a lot less time that I got with her.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's really no reason for me to, especially since I don't work up there daily.
Well, and number one, let me say hats off to you. It's nice to hear that it's for that reason. Number two, when you have achieved the level of success that you have and done it from somewhere other than Nashville, you do have to kind of ask the question of, what's the point? Well, what am I going to accomplish there that I haven't already?
Right. Honestly, I believe it would just, it's business up there and that's fine, but you get somebody that's doing well, people see you as dollar signs, And that's just how the world works. It's an unfortunate truth that everybody wants to be a part of it. Well, I can do this and manage this for you. And, and that's how Nashville is. So.
Now, you just named the small circle of people that you do like to co-write with. Walk us through your songwriting process, though. And also, you just mentioned that you'll be doing some recording. So maybe you can give us a little glimpse into what might be getting released soon, it sounds like.
Sure. So songwriting process is different, I would say. So if I'm doing a co-write, it usually goes like one of us will go through our phones and we'll exchange ideas and who maybe had some ideas in their notes of a song to write. And we'll pick one and we'll just kind of build off of each other. And that's a pretty easy process when you have multiple writers in the room that are really good and click well together. If I'm by myself, which I do a lot, man, those come out pretty fast usually. I usually write songs about 15, 20 minutes. And then I'll write them. I never type them. I never type the lyrics on my phone, never type them on the computer. I always have a composition notebook, pen, and I write the lyrics down as I go. And then I'll rewrite it down two more times on different pieces of paper and change it and adjust it as I go along to make it better. And I try to avoid what I call lazy songwriting. So, you know, if I use the same word twice in one verse, you know, like the same rhyme scheme, same rhyming word or whatever, or if I use a basic simple word, I go through each line and say, how can I make this a little more intricate but still simple enough to where it's completely understandable?
Wow. Wow. So you've talked a lot about lyrics. Do you usually, is that your stronger suit? Is it the lyric ideas usually come to you first? What does that look like as compared to writing melody?
It kind of comes together, I guess. It just all comes together because I'll usually be playing my guitar at the same time. So I'm putting it to a melody while I'm writing it. You know, or even if I'm not, I guess, you know, let's say I'm in the car or in the shower, there's some kind of melody pops in my head, and as I'm singing the song and figuring out the lyrics, just starts with an idea or something that I feel deeply and I need to write a song about it, because if it's something that I'm feeling that strongly, I'm sure other people are.
Now, the music that you're going to be going into the studio to record, are you at liberty to disclose? Is it a single? Is it an EP? Is it going to be out before the end of the year? Or is it, I can't tell you?
Sure. No, I can tell you one of them right now. I mentioned that I was growing fast on social media right now. And it's because I'm in some kind of, TikTok believes I'm in some feud with the Dixie Chicks. So... they have this Not Ready to Make Nice song that they released back in, I believe it was 2006, you know, during, after they were, I guess you could say, canceled. And it was used as an anthem, I guess, for the left side of the political aisle on TikTok, on that platform. Their song, that little part, a snippet of it, was used a couple times to basically bash people on the right. Well, there was a female conservative that used the sound, and I mean, she just got attacked. I mean, not physically, obviously, but verbally, yeah. And in her comments. And then it just became this whole thing I was watching unfold where the right side of the aisle was being told they weren't allowed to use this song, right? And so I, being the, like I said, I have a big mouth, I said, you know what? Fine, because they said you can't use the song. If you do, they're donating the money to Planned Parenthood, you know, which is controversial to most conservatives. So I went on TikTok and I made a video saying, okay, well, here's the deal. I'm going to sing the song right now and I'm going to post it and people can use my version. None of that money's going to it. And it's not a release, so they can just use that sound.
I see.
And it started a whole movement. So the same day that I did that and the thing blew up and all the girls started using it, the Dixie Chicks came online and posted for the first time in over a year.
Whoa.
And they reposted their song with a caption. And the Rolling Stones wrote me up in their article.
Whoa.
So it's been a big thing lately. So I'm going to, I bought the licensing for it, the mechanical license, and I'm going to record the cover to release the full song.
Nice. Now, I just want to go back to songwriting for one more follow-up question. The few guys that are in your little circle, are they just, you know, man, we're just all friends. Like, it, don't read too much into it. We'll be together around a fire and we'll just write a song then. Or is it, no, we're pretty structured. We schedule songwriting sessions. You know, we get together for that specific reason. It's not, we're hanging out and the song idea comes out.
Well, it's just, I don't know if you've ever met Troy Martin. I know you mentioned you'd be at the Pensacola Songwriters Festival this year, but I don't know if you've ever been before or not, but Troy is... he's a trip, man. He wrote Baby's Gotten Good at Goodbye by George Strait with his brother. And he's not structured at all. It's just like, you know, you're lucky if you get him to show up an hour into the songwriting session, right? And when he shows up, he's got Tito's in his hand, you know. But he really is. He's a wonderful dude. And that's kind of how we all are, I reckon. Bobby has been my best friend for years, like my brother. Now, he can call me and say, hey, come over. I want to write this song. And that's what we do.
Okay.
You know, but for the most part, we just kind of hang out. And we do say, hey, y'all want to get together and write a song? But then we'll hang out all day. And we may take an hour out of that to write, you know.
Gotcha. So I think you're obviously, I don't think, I know that you're obviously blessed that when you write by yourself, you're able to come up with song ideas as quickly as you said you are. Because thinking back to earlier on in the conversation, when we talked about the fact that That Bitch Carole Baskins went viral and blew up in early 2020, I imagine, and I'm trying to put this in the form of a question, Austin, I imagine when you start to see momentum really going like that, you say, all right, I need to come up with another song fast. Am I right? And is that the case? I mean, Pallets Full of Ballots was your next hit, but was that kind of a reaction like, uh-oh, this looks like things are going to finally start happening for me. I better write more.
I think that now. Back then, I didn't understand it. And I actually, you know, probably lost a lot of time and growth because of that. That was my first big mistake, is after Carole Baskins, that song, I didn't follow up and I didn't capitalize on it. I was posting and I just wasn't good enough at it yet. It was also new to me. There were a lot of early on mistakes I was making, whether it was the low quality videos or the things that I was saying, or not getting, my biggest mistake, Bruce, was not getting the song recorded fast enough in the studio. It was going so viral, and if I would have had a track to put out on iTunes, Spotify, it would have done so much better than it did.
Wow. I see.
So much better.
I see. Wow. Fascinating. Those of you in the audience that are aspiring performers, these are great lessons that Austin's given out. I hope you're either taking notes or you're going to go back and listen back to this a second time, because this is really, really great insights. I've mentioned a couple times now that next month is the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, October 1st through the 6th, and Austin, you will be performing there. Just talk about that event and the chance to play alongside some of your fellow songwriters, some that I'm sure you already know and others that you'll meet for the first time.
Man, last year was my first year doing it. And the coolest thing about that festival is when I was 15, my mom took me out there when they were doing it. And I took my guitar. We didn't know how it worked at all. So my mom was like, well, let's just go and you could take your guitar. And I was just starting to write songs. And she thought, you know, maybe I could get up and play a song. And so, you know, once we figured out how it works, I was like, oh, man, I'm not playing. So I was sitting on the steps. And one of the guys that had written songs for the Rolling Stones comes up to me and starts talking to me, and he lets me get on stage and play with him. Ever since then, I was like, man, I'm going to play this fest. I'm going to be, you know, good enough one day they'll want me to play. And up until last year, I was so busy with other stuff, I didn't even get a chance. But last year was my first year, and it was so fun, man. You know, it is a great time to reconnect with other songwriter friends that you know, maybe from social media or from the past, because we all stay pretty busy. And, you know, when one of us is playing music somewhere, there's not much need for the other one, so we don't see each other. So it's a fun time.
And speaking of staying busy, you mentioned before that you wouldn't even think of moving to Nashville until your daughter is 18. You are also a dad, and I wonder what impact becoming a father had on your music career.
So when my first daughter was born, I wasn't doing music full-time. There was no way that was happening. She's 9 years old. I was working full time. I was in sales actually at that time. I was selling jewelry, and I ended up managing a jewelry business, a retail business, for 5 years. And I did that, and that's where I left when I decided to do music and go for it. So went from making, I think I was making $80,000 to $90,000 a year consistently, to just, you know, completely like struggling for a while. But today I'm glad I did, you know.
Yeah, my hat's off to you. I think you're being a little hard on yourself by saying that you could have done more at the time that that Bitch Carole Baskins took off, because you were new to it all and you couldn't pretend to have all the answers then. And the fact that you walked away from the job you just described and the money that you were making to say, you know, my heart is with music and I'm going to be making way, way, way less, but this is what I want to be doing. My hat's off to you, and to be as committed to being a dad as you are is most admirable. I mentioned back in the intro that you have released four songs in 2024, the last of which was Voting for a Felon, which came out on June 28th. If you want to just talk about that song before we move on to our closing song.
Sure. Yeah, Voting for a Felon is the very first song since Pallets Full of Ballots of a political nature that I've released. Mm. And I actually, you know, it's funny, all that is a cell phone recording that I put on my computer and kind of tried to make not sound so horrible. But I made a cell phone recording because I made a video to post a song, and I'll do short acoustic videos before I consider recording something most of the time, because I want to test it out with the audience and see if it's something that they're liking, and I'll adjust accordingly until it does do well.
Wow.
And so I did that, and man, it started taking off. So I was like, man, I'm not going to make this mistake. I'm just going to upload this to iTunes. Sure enough, I did. And it's actually on the charts right now, along with Take Me Back to the 90s. They both should still be on the charts, I think.
Fantastic.
They just recently went back in. So,
and don't miss the lesson that Austin just gave out, audience, if you're an aspiring performer, of testing the songs out first to see what the audience is thinking before you go all in with it. And Austin, again, my hat's off to you to react to what the feedback is and making adjustments. A lot of songwriters would say, I don't care, what do these people know? This is, I'm the one that wrote the song, and this is a good song, like it or not, and, you know, and just be really stubborn in their ways. And for you to say, you know, I want to know what the people think, that's a nice approach, because it's only going to make those people feel more connected to you, that they know that they're a part of your songwriting.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Not only that, but on that note, for anybody listening, I take me back to the 90s. I'll give you an example. I posted that song, I'm not exaggerating, at least 15 different times before it actually went viral. And so me saying that is saying that every single time, it's not that I changed the song every time. It's maybe I needed to switch my camera angle. I needed to, you know, just structure the video differently, or maybe I do a little skit beforehand, because you know how social media works. You got to catch people's attention within the first, you know, 3 to 5 seconds for them to stay and even listen at all, because people's attention span is so small. So if I would have stopped after I posted that song, let's say 4 times, and it wasn't getting traction, if I would have just quit and been like, man, that's not a good one, and hung it up, then I would have never had the song that is now my best-selling song, or, you know, best-performing song. But if you believe in a song, right, don't get all discouraged just because it seems like nobody likes it. Maybe they don't have a good enough reason to really listen yet.
Mm. Well, and, you know, the adjustments that you just described for us, they might end up being something that you find out. You know, I'm going to shorten up the guitar intro because it's just too long, and I got to hook the people in faster when they're watching this video. All of a sudden, you play that guitar intro shorter, and you go, you know what? Maybe that guitar intro is just a little bit too long as it is, and now I just learned that maybe the song is better off with a quicker lead-in.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The stuff that we have now, and everybody has a phone in their face, and I know we keep talking about TikTok, but it is the main social media app, and you know, people just scroll through there so fast. I mean, their attention span is just nothing, you know, so you have to adjust. I thought I would never get on TikTok. I hated it, hated the idea. I wanted to stick with Facebook and YouTube. I thought it was for teenagers.
And lo and behold, here you are, 882,000 followers later.
Right.
We're going to close today with another one of Austin's original songs, one called Whiskey Don't Shoot Me Tonight, which came out earlier this year on Leap Day, as a matter of fact, February 29th. Before I let you go and I play that song, Austin, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Sure. So I mentioned earlier that I quit drinking a little over a year ago. But before that, most of my adult life, I was a bad alcoholic. I would wake up every day, I would drink 2 energy drinks and nothing but alcohol the rest of the day on into the night. So, and I mean, my fingers had started turning yellow. So I wrote this song with Bobby, and I think Nick wrote on this one with us. And it was an idea that I had basically just about the struggles of alcoholism, and it was while I was still drinking that we wrote this. So it's very from the heart, and it turned out to be a great song. So.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Austin, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. I'm going to be looking forward to seeing you at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival. But for now, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me, man.
You bet. You bet. And folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Austin Foreman. Check out his link tree for all kinds of places to engage with him and his music. On the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, I'm going to put a link to Austin's link tree. Once you land there, you will be able to tap or click over to get his music from the likes of iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music. Although remember that it's also on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this show is on. I have now followed Austin on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. Be sure to also check out, of course, his wildly popular TikTok account and his YouTube channel. For that matter, tell Austin you heard him and his music on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. You just heard him talking about the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, which is taking place October 1st through the 6th. That is a great opportunity for you to see him perform and meet me at the festival as well. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Austin and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, 10 and a half years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 552. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Austin Foreman. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Whiskey Don't Shoot Me Tonight.
I swear there's a target on my back. I can't tell if it's George. It could be Jim or Jack. But that bottle's got me lined up in its sights. Oh, whiskey, don't shoot me tonight. Each shot is like a bullet on the bar. I keep trying to dodge them, but I never get too far. I brought a knife to a gunfight. Open whiskey, don't shoot me tonight. That 90 proof feels like a 45 pressed on my lips. I'm playing Russian roulette every time I take a sip. Living in this war and fighting for my life. Oh, whiskey, don't shoot me tonight. Praying whiskey, all day avoiding landmines, but I still end up on this door behind enemy lines, like I'm in a showdown from an old black and white. Open whiskey, don't shoot me tonight. That 90 proof feels like a 45 pressed on my lips. Playing Russian roulette every time I take a sip. I'm living in this war and fighting for my life. Oh, whiskey, don't shoot me tonight. Praying whiskey, don't shoot me tonight.
room feels like a 45 pressed on my lips. I'm playing Russian roulette every time I take a sip. He's got me half loaded and his trigger fingers like all whiskey.